that little umbrella.
Okay. Somewhere.
It says on the field behind you. Right there.
Okay, thank you. Shizash, Kylo. There's a documented incident took place in the United States. Yitzhak Zilberstein brings down one of his farm. Yitzhak Zilberstein, Rebbe Yashiv's son-in-law. Documented incident about a man on a late on a Friday afternoon. A man goes in to buy an automobile, a brand new car for $50,000. Drives out of the automobile dealership, and he goes straight to a used car dealer. He's got a $50,000 car. He drives in. He says to the guy, "Listen, I just bought this car. It costs $50,000. I'll sell it to you for $20,000. The used car dealer says to him, "You know, why would you want to sell a $50,000 car for $20,000? He says, "Don't ask questions. You make a quick $30,000. Don't ask questions." The guy says, "I don't know. It sounds a little fishy." He says, "Let me think about it." He walks out of the office. He calls the police. Cop comes down. He says, "Why do you want to sell a $50,000 car for $20,000? The guy says, "The cop, none of your business." The cop says, "Oh yeah, I'm going to make it my business." Goes over and he calls the office. Calls the credit card office. So let's see what he's doing. Calls the credit card office, and it turns out, sure enough, he's got a $50,000, he's got a credit line, everything's in order, no problem. Sorry, messed it up. He called the credit card office, they're closed for the weekend. So the guy says to the cop, says to him, "I'm going to have to lock you up over the weekend. Monday morning, I'll call the credit card company, we'll see what it's doing." Okay, Monday morning, he calls up the credit card company, and sure enough, the guy's got a credit line, everything's in order. Comes back to the prison. He says to the guy, "Here's your credit card, you're free to go." The guy says, "Thank you very much." He leaves the prison and goes straight to an attorney's office, files a lawsuit against the police department for false arrest. He planned the entire thing start to finish to do something that looks questionable. It's perfectly legal. You could sell your car for any price you want, whenever you want. You could even give it away if you want. He did it on a Friday afternoon because he knew the company would be closed over the weekend, so he would be able to lock up over the weekend. He'd be able to plead emotional trauma and distress. And in court, that's exactly what he pleaded, and he got a settlement of $3.5 million. Documented story. $3.5 million. So I know what you're thinking. You know, what can I do? This question that's legal, but it's, I know. Get in line. So my wife said to me when I told her the story the first time, she said to me, "Who would think of that?" And I said, "Well, millionaires, that's why we're not, because we didn't think of it." He brings down this maaser. What's the idea? There's a Moser Haskel. Moser Haskel is, there are certain things in life that a person, that we do, we take for granted. We don't realize ourselves the cheshivos of what we're doing. We don't realize ourselves what we're doing. Go through mitzvahs. We're doing mitzvahs all the time. Many of the mitzvahs that we do, we ourselves don't appreciate the importance and the value of the mitzvahs. I think one of the classic examples, like Talmud Torah, certainly Talmud Torah Kenegad Kulam, every word of Torah that a person learns, and it's a difficult mitzvah to appreciate because Torah is an intangible. Chazal say it's a hevel, it's a vapor. She'olam mushtas olav. Gemara in Sanhedrin says it's divrei hevel, she'olam mushtas olav. Torah is vapor. It's a non-physical, intangible mitzvah. And like many mitzvahs, we don't appreciate the cheshivas of it. I think that one of the areas, especially this time of year, is the entire concept of preparation, Pesach and Pesach preparations. You know, what do you call it? Nissan comes along. Somebody once said, there isn't a goy in the world who will ever experience the pleasure, the joy, the rapture of hearing a clap after Amavorech Esamo Yisrael Bashalom to announce there's no Tachnun on a Monday or Thursday. No goy in the world will ever experience that pleasure. And, you know, you look forward to Nisan, Pesach comes along, you know, and I know in Shul, because, there's always that kind of that hesitation for a couple of seconds right after Amavorech Esamo Yisrael Bashalom. People are looking around. And if you hear that clap, everybody has like a bounce in their step. You know, everybody just kind of picks everybody up. There's always that one person say, why aren't we saying Tachanun? You know, just worry about it. It's like the kid in school always says, what, no homework today? Just leave it alone. Fine. You find out whose bris it is afterwards. I didn't see any babies in school. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. It'll be okay. So here we go with the Nisan, and now we're all got that bounce in ourselves a whole month. No Tachanun, Mincha, everything's lighter. Okay. We lost Tachanun, though. We lost Tachanun. The value of Tachanun, Monday, Thursday, Tachanun. Okay, we lost it. We don't appreciate ourselves. The value, I timed it, how long it takes in our shul to say Tachanun. They dreaded Tachanun. It takes 4 minutes. It takes 4 minutes start to finish. Tachanun. Comes along Pesach. You got Pesach cleaning. You got all the things that go into Pesach. So person understands that, do we appreciate the value of what we're doing? Do we appreciate what Pesach is, the value of what we're doing, what we're about to do at the Seder? If we really appreciate the value of it and the chashivas of it, we'd go into it with a somewhat different attitude. I was once at a Sheva Brachas 3 days before Pesach. Somebody made a Sheva Brachas 3 days before Pesach. So people were talking about how this couple, what tzaddikim they are, 3 days before Pesach, their house is all Sheva Brachas. Can you imagine what's going on in the house? 3 days before Pesach. So I had to speak at the Sheva Brachas. So I looked, I said, you know, you look at the chassan and kala, and it's a pleasure. Here's the chassan and kala, and it's a joy, a pleasure to see a married couple who's actually on speaking terms 3 days before Pesach. It's just a beautiful thing. And what happens in the home, there's a certain amount of tension, there's a certain amount of difficulty, it's a challenge going into Pesach. First, I have to understand, Chazal say, kol shekoyes, kol mine gehenim sholtim bo. Person gets angry, all sorts of gehenim, he sort of suffers all sorts of gehenim. Different ideas what the Chazal means. Kol shekoyes, kol mine gehenim sholtim bo. It doesn't say anywhere in Chazal, to my knowledge, that if anybody finds a crumb on Pesach, kol mine gehenim sholtim bo. Maybe his wife, because he should have cleaned up better. That's something else. But it doesn't say kol mine gehenim sholtim bo. So the person has to understand, when we get into Pesach, the chashivus, the same way that there's a chashivus to the mitzvahs that we do actively, there's a chashivus to the restraint in all areas of midos and derech eretz. And at this time of the year, when people are, where there is that tension, and this goes for the ladies as well, that the idea is that it should be done b'simcha, and if it's done b'simcha, cleaning for Pesach, preparing for Pesach, that increases the schar of what we're doing tenfold based on the chashivas of the mitzvah. That's the idea. Now, I heard from B'Shem Reb Tzvi Meyer Zilberberg an unbelievable zug. I found this very, very powerful. Imagine that you win the lottery. Imagine you win $20 million. We've all had that daydream. Usually the daydream starts at $10 million. But then when we realize how much we're going to give away to tzedakah, we realize we're not left with enough, so we up the ante of the daydream. All right, so we go to $20 million. Imagine I have $20 million. So $20 million, what are you going to do? I'm going to definitely give away chomesh. Oh, for sure, chomesh for $20 million. Okay, so $4 million. And you go to the Gabbai tzedakah. You go to the Gabbai tzedakah, the local Tomchei Shabbos, and you give them $4 million. Takes the money, and with the $4 million, he supports 500 mishpachas every Shabbos for a year. 500 families are eating Shabbos, 3 meals on Shabbos, every Shabbos for the year, because of your $4 million. How do you think you'd feel Motzei Shabbos when you go to sleep? You know, 500 mishpachas had Shabbos because of you. How would you feel? Feel pretty good, right? Now imagine you're on your way to go to the Gabbai tzedakah, $4 million, and an anti-Semite stops you, and he says, okay, Jew, I give you a choice. Take a bite of pork, or I confiscate your $4 million. I got to make a cheshbon. If I give him the money, so I won't have the 500 families, I won't have the benefit, and for one bite of pork, I'm going to lose all that money, and those families are going to suffer, and all the cheshbonis. Yet the halach is davar pashut. You have to give up all your money. You can't be over on one iser. Not one. Can't take one bite of pork. Okay? So, person has to give up the pork. Now, just imagine, it's not pork, because none of us have that challenge. That's nothing for us. But imagine the anti-Semite says to you, tell me one sentence of Lashon Hara, or I'm going to take away your $4 million. One sentence of Lashon Hara, it doesn't have to be drastic. All you have to say is, Chaim has messy handwriting. That's perfect Lashon Hara Lemahadrin, right? And it's true, everything got all the qualifications. And you'd have to give up $4 million to not say one sentence of Lashon Hara. Okay? It's, right? Now, I want to ask you a question. Did any of you in the last week, were you going to say some Lashon Hara and you restrained yourself? Were you going to say a sentence of Onoas Dvarim and you restrained yourself? If you did, then what you did is bigger than giving $4 million to the Tomchei Shabbos to support 500 families. Because if there'd be a clash between the two, you'd have to give up the money and not be over on the Isser. The person understands, every time we restrain ourselves, every time a person is doing that, and according to the Chazal, that when a person is sitting and learning, a person is doing a mitzvah actively, they get schar for all the averas that they're not doing. There is a shita that while we're sitting here right now, we are getting schar for not murdering, for not wearing shatness, for not eating worms. We're getting schar for that right now. There is such an opinion. What is an opinion? Most opinions are that you have to be actively tempted by it, but there is an opinion. Now, according to that opinion, understand what's going on. Right now, we are becoming multi-millionaires. So a person understands when it comes to Pesach, every moment of restraint, So we don't ask for the test. You'll notice I'm 6,000 miles away on Erev Pesach. I'm 6,000 miles away from home. There's a reason for that. This is not an accident. And I'm getting tremendous schar. So at the end of the day, the schar for the mitzvah, we have to understand the magnitude of the mitzvah we're doing. That's idea number one. Idea number two is that when we go to the Pesach Seder, so we do something very strange. We sit down at the Seder, Kadesh, Urchatz, you know, there's always somebody, you know, you've got to remind yourself, make sure not to make an Allah Tilos Yadayim. There's always one teenager who pretends to make a bracha and everybody's shocked that he didn't really say Hashem's name. He said Adoneinu. There's always one in every family. And then there's one person, the from seminary girl who came home and she did make the bracha. She made a full Tilos Yadayim. Then you got all Shiloh. What do we do now? She should take a bite of matzah. It goes on in every home. And you get the Kaddish, you have Karpas, right? And you get Karpas, and you're starving hungry because all day long probably haven't eaten. And we get to the Seder, Karpas. And always there's the brother-in-law who's the brisker who says, less than a kazayis, less, that's more than too much. And the brisker will only let you have a microscopic particle of celery as eat it. And you go to the Karpas. Okay, now, what is Karpas? Karpas is an appetizer. Karpas is an appetizer. And then what do? We eat this appetizer, then we wait. At a minimum, in a fast Seder, you probably wait 45 minutes until you finally get to the meal, as after an appetizer. And in a regular Seder, you probably wait an hour, hour and a half. And if you're by your share, you could wait 3 or 4 hours, right? Until you get to the Seder. And you have to pretend to enjoy it, too. Okay, now, you get schar for every moment you do that, by the way. So here you have the karpas, and you take this karpas, which is an appetizer, and then you wait. And it seems interminable until you wait. By the way, for shalom bayis, parenthetically, if there are any ladies listening, first rule, Erev Pesach, first thing you do Erev Pesach in the morning, a big pot of food. First thing is a big pot of food, Erev Pesach. That's the rule. So because everybody is hungrier on Erev Pesach, it's almost like we're just absolutely starving on Erev Pesach. And it's good for Shalom Bayis. And the ladies should know also during the weeks leading up to Pesach, they cannot live just on leftover Shalach Manas. There have to be meals in the home as well. A family cleans on their stomach. So it's very important for Shalom Bayis. We've been through this. So you eat the karpas, and then we wait. And we wait, and it seems an interminable amount of time. Why should we wait? Why? Question number one. Question number two, Chazal say, Klal Yisrael were Amimta Shari Tuma. They didn't change their names. They didn't change their clothing. They didn't change their language, which is a shock. Tremendous. 210 years, people came to the United States from Europe. They came to the United States. Their names were changed before they got off the boat. 210 years, they're still called Fivel, Fishel, right? Those are the names. Anshel. They spoke Yiddish. And they wore Jewish clothing. That was 210 years in Mitzrayim. Tremendous level. So how can Chazal say they're on Memtah Shari Tuma? Where's the room to be on Memtah Shari Tuma? How can you be on Memtah Shari Tuma? If you have a judge, you're so loyal, so Jewish, how can it happen? How can you be still on Memtah Shari Tuma? Those are two questions. So the answers are interrelated. And the answer is like this. Imagine Klal Yisrael after 210 years. They know there's supposed to be a Redeemer. And they believe there's going to be a Redeemer. You know how much? If I would ask you, anybody in this room, do you believe that Mashiach is going to come? Every single person. Of course. Of course we believe Mashiach is going to come. Are you kidding? You know how many songs we have about Mashiach? Of course we believe it. They're all, right? At the end of an NCSY Shabbaton, for sure. So, who doesn't believe in Mashiach? Everybody believes in Mashiach. Right? We do. We're Ma'aminim. We're Chayav. When did you only call it? Did you get up in the morning? I don't know if you read newspapers, go online, whatever you do, when you look at your news items. Did you go online? Did you check to see, did Mashiach arrive? Did you call your friend? Any news? Any news? What's it? Anything about Mashiach? Anybody? I didn't. I don't know. Maybe you did. Maybe some of you did. I didn't. Why not? Because there's believing and there's believing. I believe it. Yeah, I believe it. How much is it really in my kishkes? Is it really in my kishkes? Klal Yisrael, 210 years you're in Mitzrayim. After 210 years, they believed in a Redeemer the same way we believe in Mashiach. But yeah, there's going to be a Mashiach. It's almost like nowadays, whenever somebody goes through a difficult situation, somebody loses money or somebody's on something happens to somebody, one of the worst ways to comfort a person is, don't worry, you know, Mashiach could come any moment now. Right? Nobody wants to hear that, because I know you don't believe it as much as you know that I don't believe that you don't believe it, and you don't want to be comforted. That's like saying Gamzu Latova to people. Right? When somebody bends down, if a person bends down, you drop your pen, you pick your head up, you hit your head on the table. So you're supposed to say, Gamzu Latova. It happens to somebody else, you never say it. Somebody else has to say, Gamzula Tova. You know why? Because then he'll hit you with a chair and say, Gamzula Tova, right? Then you have a Gamzula Tova fight. You Gamzula Tova, you, and I'll Gamzula Tova. Don't Gamzula Tova on my expense. Person understands, when it comes to the belief, Klal Yisrael, after 210 years, there's a certain complacency that sets in. The complacency is, this is who we are, we're second-class citizens, we go through the motions, after all, we're being hit and beaten by midstream. It's a difficult situation for a person to be charged up. When a person's not charged up, they're vos Hashem, they get the mentah shari tumah. Even with Jewish names, Jewish clothing, Jewish language, they could still be on mentah shari tumah. Because the biggest form of tumah in the world is a person who's not growing. A person who's not growing is a person who is stagnating, means by definition that they're going downwards. That's Memta Shari Tuma. There's a medrash that says when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu showed up and then he left for 6 months. The medrash says Moshe Rabbeinu came, Pakod Pakadati. Everybody believed it was him. Somebody with a speech impediment, it's difficult to say Pakod Pakadati. That was one of the simanim that Moshe Rabbeinu could say those words, Pakod Pakadati. They believe Moshe Rabbeinu is here. Then Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared for 6 months. That's what the Medrash says. What's up, Shah? What does that mean he disappeared for 6 months? For what? What's the reason? What do you think was the attitude the next day after Moshe Rabbeinu disappeared? What do you think people were talking about then? Any news? Did you find out, hear anything? Is it coming back? Did you check? Any word about it? Any sightings? A day later, any news? Moshe Rabbeinu, if Mashiach would show up now and he would leave, which based on the way things look in the world, not unlikely. But if a ship would show up and he would run away, it would leave for 6 months, then we'd be believing it. Then we'd be talking about it. And our davening would look different. And the way what time we come to shul would look different. And our devotion to Torah and mitzvahs would look different because we know it's imminent. It breaks us, it wakes us up out of the complacency. Klal Yisrael, when Moshe Rabbeinu showed up to break the complacency of Klal Yisrael. Now they have 6 months. Imagine a person has a painful knee condition. A person has a painful knee condition. Chronic knee pain. Goes to the doctor, and the doctor says to the guy, look, I have a pill that takes away for 24 hours. You take a pill, no knee pain for 24 hours, no side effects. Okay, tries the pill, goes home. First time in years, he has zero pain and no side effects. Comes back to the doctor the next day. The doctor says, how was it? He says, it was great. I'll take a prescription. He says, I'm sorry. The Food and Drug Administration has not okayed the pill yet. It won't be on the market for 6 months. There are a few bureaucrats over there that have to sign things in their drain. It won't be on the market for 6 months. Do you think that in the next 6 months, he will be more annoyed or less annoyed by the pain in his knees? The chances are he's going to be more annoyed. Up until that point, you learn to live with it. Okay, I'll deal with it. Now that I know it's available, it's there, and some bureaucrat is holding up my progress, and I have to suffer because then I'm really annoyed, then I'm sensitive to the pain. Once Klal Yisrael know the Yeshua is there, then Klal Yisrael are willing to, they become more energized, more enthusiastic about Torah and mitzvahs. Says the Shem Yishmuel, that's a shot in the karpas. Believe it or not, Shem Yishmuel says, you know why we eat the karpas? Everything we do at the Pesach Seder is symbolic. Everything is symbolic of the Seder. Chazal, whatever they instituted, it's all got deep symbolism, deep effects. The karpas, according to Shem Yishmuel, is a way to arouse the appetite. The Yeshua is the food when the food finally comes out. And that is symbolic of Klal Yisrael, where Klal Yisrael we're holding, to awaken us, to try to bring out the enthusiasm, to carry it over into the emes, the part of our life, where we have to be more enthusiastic about Torah and mitzvahs, and to break the complacency. Now, obviously, the star of the show is matzah. You got matzah, and you got chametz, the obvious, what do you call it? And somebody once pointed out in Eretz Yisrael, once bought matzah 1 year, the matzah cost, at the time, I think it was about 180 shekels a kilo. I made a calculation, and it came out to about 35 cents a bite. Right? That's what the matzah came out, the dehainu lechem oni. And you know, when you see your 4-year-old sitting at the Pesach Seder crumbling up matzah, and you're just thinking, hey kid, do me a favor, you know, play with mommy's jewelry. Not that stuff, you know, anything but that. That's not what you should be doing. So you have obviously the star of the show is the Pesach is the matzah and the chametz. What's matzah, chametz? What's it got to do with complacency? What's it got? How's it tie in? So there's a Chazal, everybody knows the Medrash. There's a Medrash that says, in the future, Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to kill the Yetzer Hara. He's going to shech the Yetzer Hara. Gemara in Sukkah Daf Nun Beis says in the Asi Lovo, what's going to happen? What's the ultimate destiny of the Yetzer Hara? Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to shech them. Going to shech the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara says everybody's going to cry. Tzaddikim are going to cry and the Rishayim are going to cry. So Gemara says, okay, whatever that means to shech the Yetzer Hara. So if you take a look, the Gemara says the Tzaddikim are going to cry, the Rishayim. Why are the Tzaddikim going to cry? The Tzaddikim are going to say, how did we overcome this incredible mountain? Mountain called the Yetzer Hara. How do we overcome this incredible mountain? The pain, the investment. A person thinks back of something difficult they did in life. If you ever graduated anything, and you think back of studying for tests, studying for finals, midterms, whatever it is, a person could sometimes cry, you know, when they think about either the difficulty of studying for the test or why did I waste so much time studying for that test? You know, there's somebody sitting next to me. I could have saved me all that time. Whatever it is that a person cries about when they think back about tests, but a person, you cry. When you think about the pain, you cry. The tzaddikim see a mountain. They say, how did we overcome this mountain? And they cry. The Rishayim, Gemara says, they say, how did we stumble over this thin strand of hair? That's the conflict between the tzaddikim, the difference between tzaddikim and Rishayim. So the obvious question is, well, what is it? What is the Yetzer Hara? Is he a mountain? Or is he a thin strand of hair? Which one is it? And if it, whichever one he is, how can he be seen as two different things by two different people? So one of the explanations is that, and I think that this is a yesod, I've never met anybody who has not experienced this chazal, this gemara. Everybody in their own life has experienced this at some point. There are two, in every experience of life, there are two stages. There's one stage in life, which is the imagination stage. There's another stage in life, which is the actualization stage. Where a person actually experiences whatever it was that he was imagining. In the imagination stage, for the most part, in the imagination stage, everything looks bigger, better, unbelievable. Person thinks about things that they're, how it's going to be. There's so many examples in life. Person, for example, towards the end of Yom Kippur, where a person starts thinking about exactly what he's going to break his fast on. And, you know, even we are deeply spiritual people, but some of us do have a flashing thought once in a while towards the end of Yom Kippur. And, you know, it's either going to be like, you know, this banana split with, you know, the whipped cream and the you know, and it's going to be unbelievable. I mean, it's really going to be the banana barge to end all banana barges. Or it's going to be three slices of pizza wedged together. I think that's a minhag Yisrael now. You have to take three and wedge them, especially if you're a yeshiva bacher. You're not allowed to eat one. And they, you know, and we think about how good it's going to be. It's going to be unbelievable. And then it happens. Yom Kippur ends. Person eats. You know, after about half a sandwich or a sandwich, you know, I'm basically good. You know, it wasn't that great. I'm basically good. I mean, I have to eat more because of reputation to uphold. You know, you don't want to say, well, how much do you have after Yom Kippur? Only one sandwich. You know, that won't cut it. But in the imagination, I can imagine, you know, an entire refrigerator, and it just doesn't happen. Person travels. You ever go traveling? Vacation. Vacation. Let's travel. I heard about a couple. that used to plan. They spent months planning their vacations. Husband and wife, brochures, lodges, accommodations, everything. But they never went because they didn't want to ruin it. So you know, first in the imagination stage, unbelievable. It's going to be gewaldic. We're going to travel. Yeah, then you travel and you find out, you know, well, it was a little bit boring. There wasn't much to do. Somebody once said, going there is much better than getting there, right? Once you're there, I think Pesach time, especially, everybody experiences family. Families together in Pesach, we're families coming in. We're all going to be together, and we are going to be so happy. Right? That lasts for about as long as it takes to say that sentence. Right? And then by the end of the trip, everybody's like, bye, it was nice seeing you. Yeah, hopefully another 6 months so we do this again. Right, because when the imagination stage is tremendous, until you actually get there, when you get there, you find out that there's a letdown. What's the difference between a tzaddik and a rasha? A tzaddik is somebody who sees it in the imagination. It's got a forbidden pleasure. And in the imagination, the forbidden pleasure looms big like a mountain. The definition of a tzaddik is that he doesn't succumb. So he sees the forbidden pleasure, and he walks away from it, and he's living with the impression that he just forfeited a mountain of pleasure. And he cries when he thinks about, how did I overcome that mountain of pleasure? That's a tzaddik. What's a rasha? The rasha sees the mountain, indulges, and he walks away shaking his head time after time that was it. I mean, it was okay. It might have been good, but that was it. It was not what it was cracked up to be in the imagination. I think everybody in some area of life has been through it. If you take a piece of matzah, take bread. If you would crush down bread, you ever seen a Yemenite matzah? You ever seen the pliable, soft Yemenite matzahs? Which, by the way, I have a strong suspicion that was the original Korech. Because when we get the Korech at the Pesach Seder, I'm sure you've wondered, just like I have, who thought of the idea of taking two hard pieces of matzah, putting romaine lettuce in between, where it's one of the poorest combinations of a sandwich. You know, two-thirds end up here, and one-third ends up over here. And, you know, whose idea was that? Now, if you stop and think, if it was a soft matzah, Hillel was a Bavli, likely they had the soft matzah, and it wraps around lettuce very well. That, you know, that is korech. Korech means to wrap. Korech does not mean to crunch. Korech means to wrap. And therefore, it is likely that's what the original korech was. Now, if you take bread, if you would pat down bread, and you would, you know, put it in some sort of compressor, pat it down, it would look exactly like a flat piece of matzah. So exactly what's the difference between the two? Airspace. Imagination. That's the whole difference. Bread, everybody knows that matzah, chametz represents the Yetzirah. The chametz, which is the Yetzirah, what's the difference between that and the matzah? The difference is airspace, imagination. Press it out, that's all it is. There's nothing there. It's an illusion. The entire thing's an illusion. That's the difference between. Now, why do we eat them for 7 days? Mm-hmm. 7 days represents the 7 decades of a lifetime. In other words, it's a reminder to us that that's our attitude. What we're trying to take out of Pesach is the attitude that during the 7 decades of the average lifespan, in Bigvuro, Shvonim, Shana, sometimes people make it to 80. Men live to 70. The statistics apparently are that men live to about 73. Women live to about 76. Those are the statistics. I don't know anything more about those statistics or why they are, but that's what it is. I actually found a statistic that said married men actually live longer than single men. Interesting, isn't it? Married men live longer than single men, but married men are more willing to die. The matzah represents the 7 decades of the lifetime. And the reminder on Pesach is that in the course of our 7 decades of our lifetime, we're meant to remind ourselves that we are being pushed around by this illusion and that our goal is to try to overcome it. Idea number one. Idea number two, so another difference between the matzah and the chametz. That is as follows. There was a Sheva Brachas in Eretz Yisrael, and the father of the Kala gets up at the Sheva Brachas and says, I would like to tell you how I ended up choosing, you know, Yankel as a son-in-law. He gets up and says, you know, a few months back, I had to get to Bnei Brak from Yerushalayim. And I waited, and I saw a car coming by. I was waiting to get a ride from somebody coming out of a frum neighborhood. And a wonderful bacher stops his car. It was a blistering hot day. I got in his car. We went from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak. Blistering hot day. And the air conditioning in the car wasn't working. And we got out into traffic, and there was a big traffic jam. And it took us a long time, an extra hour and a half to go from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak. And everything was tense. People were hot and bothered. And not once the entire time did this young man honk. When I saw his midos, that he had that kind of self-control, that's when I decided to take him as a son-in-law. And he says, that was my son-in-law Yaakov. That's how I chose him. And the father, people are like, wow. And then the father-in-law sits down. And Yaakov leans over to him and he says, Pa, my horn wasn't working that day. So, you know, sometimes in life, you know, you think that you think you got it all worked out, and you realize that there may be somebody running the show, not quite the way you would have run it, not quite the way you would have planned it. What's the difference between matzah and chametz? I have to tell you another story. There was a group of kashrus mashgichim went from Eretz Yisrael to Japan. When he got to Japan, they get up to the counter and they have a connecting flight. So the young lady behind the counter tells them, you're going to have to pay another $200 for your connecting flight. He said, no, it goes all the way through. We booked it. She says, no, you're not. You're going to pay the $200 or you're not going to get on the flight. And she said, they start getting upset. She was getting upset. So at a certain point, she turned to her colleague at the table and she cursed them in Japanese. So they were upset and they realized they've been cursed, even if you don't know the language. And they realized they've been cursed and they were upset and tired and jet-lagged and upset. And one of them turned to the other one and he said under his breath, he kind of nodded with his head to the two ladies over there and he said, and he shouldn't have said it, but he said, Shiyamusu Misa Mishuna, which roughly means may they die a painful death. So, he was upset. So she hears him and she says to him, go to office. She says in broken English, she says, go to office. There's an office at the end of the corridor. They walk down to the office, there's Mashgichim. They knock on the door. They hear a voice come in. They walk inside. There's a Japanese colonel sitting behind the desk. He says, what's the problem, gentlemen? He says in fluent English, what's the problem? He said, listen, we got these tickets. They go all the way through. She's giving us a hassle. Supposed to pay only $200. We don't want to pay it. He says, let me see your tickets. He takes, give him the tickets. Pulls out his pen, he initials the ticket, says you can get on the plane, no problem. It turned out, this colonel's name was Shiyamusu Misa Mishuna. When they said Shiyamusu Misa Mishuna, she got nervous. She thought that they had protexia with the colonel. So she sent them to the colonel. If you know the man, go to him. So Mr. Shiyamusu Misa Mishuna then took out his pen, initialed the ticket. So sometimes in life, a person thinks, there's no hope. We're out of there. What's going? And you see, there is a Ribbono Shel Olam who's running the world. Look at the difference. Look at the difference between, I heard this story, by the way. Somebody once said to me, is that story true? I want to tell you something. First of all, I heard it B'Shem and Adam Gadol. Adam Gadol said the story, number one. Number two, if it's not true, I would love to meet the person who made up the story. That is somebody you want to hang around with. Whoever can think of that. Yeah. So, and it's certainly true that I heard it. The difference between matzah and chametz is, watch how matzah is made, watch how chametz is made. Take a piece of bread. How does a woman make bread? You take flour, you take water, you knead it together. And then she puts in some leavening agents, puts in yeast. She leaves it alone overnight. I have woken up in the morning, Friday mornings, I've woken up, and I've actually found out where my wife has made the challah dough, and she puts it in a big plastic bag. She's left it in the kitchen. I've actually found it on the floor, where it's shifted because it's gotten so big, it's actually shifted weight. The positioning is shifted. Sometimes I find if you put it in the refrigerator, sometimes I find the refrigerator door is open. It's actually pushed the door. Sometimes the refrigerator door is open because I open it Thursday night to eat the kugel that's in there. Yeah, we've all been there. You ever wonder how that happens, by the way? Men come in Thursday night, wife is sleeping. What a dream. You walk over to the refrigerator, it's 12:30 at night, 1 o'clock, you finish your mishmar. You walk over to the refrigerator, you open it up, there's a fresh kugel staring you in the face. And all of a sudden, the voice, how does she know? Don't touch the kugel. It's for the Goldstein's kiddish. Whoa. I was right there. I was so close. She snatched the feet out of the jaws of victory. I was so close. What can I eat? There's tuna fish in there. Yeshua's Hashem care of mine. So you understand, a person, so what's it? You make the dough. Now, what that means is that when the bread is made, so she makes the dough, put in the yeast. The bread participates in its own development. The bread is actually a partner. You made it, but it helped to make itself. Matzah, you ever seen how matzah is made? Take it, take the flour, the water, mix it up together very quickly, flatten it down into the oven. The matzah does not participate at any level in its own development. Pesach, we need a reminder. How did we get out of Mitzrayim? Chazal say, as the Medrash says, no slave ever escaped Mitzrayim. Ever. And to think that 600,000 people, 2.5 million altogether, would have just gotten up and walked out? Completely, completely unimaginable. Klai Yisrael had nothing to do with leaving Mitzrayim. And we say that in the Seder. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have taken us out, we'd still be there today. We'd still be in Mitzrayim today. We had zero, nothing, we didn't participate whatsoever. That's a reminder of matzah. Chometz means that we're involved. Matzah is a reminder, you do nothing. You control nothing. You, I, we control nothing. And the same way that a person sometimes lives under the illusion that he is, it's his hishtadlus, it's his effort, comes along, Pesach, matzah, reminds us, he has nothing to do with you. In Eretz Yisrael, there was a couple in the old city, I think it was, they went Thursday night, they had no money. The wife says to the husband, we need money for Shabbos. The husband says, I don't have any more money. She said, what are we going to do? He says, I'll have to go borrow. I don't know what to do. And she gets upset. She's putting pressure on her husband. The husband says, I'll have to stop learning. I'll have to do make more hishtadlus. And the wife starts crying. The husband's upset. Wife's upset. All of a sudden, they hear shattering glass from the back room. They go running into the back room. A burglar broke into the house. Pulls out a gun. Both of you get on the floor. So husband's lying. He says, listen, buddy, if you're looking, you're in the wrong place. He says, I'll decide. Don't you dare move. Does the rounds of the house. He comes back, puts his leg up on the window ledge. He's about to leave. Reaches in the pocket, pulls out a wad of bills, throws it to the couple. He says, here, you need this more than I do, and out he goes. Now, as far as hishtadlus, right, that would not be, you know, what are you doing for hishtadlus? Well, we leave our back window open. You know, that's hishtadlus. That's not responsible hishtadlus. That doesn't count. But there's so many situations in life where a person sees, you know, I was at a dead end. There's no way out. And all of a sudden you see that you're in the Ribbono Shalom's hands. Person, sometimes I figure, I'm doing everything right. And then you see it doesn't work out. Well, what happened? Because you're in the Ribbono Shalom's hands. And if a person is coldly honest with themselves, we don't like to admit it, most of the things that we've ever succeeded in life, it's in spite of us, not because of us. Right? We try. And sometimes you get the feeling, as you get a little older, you get the feeling, Kosh Baruch Hu just moving you around and leading you around. That's the reminder. That's what the matzah is. We find something very rare over here. It says, Kol amar b'lesaper b'yitzias b'yitzayim harizim meshubach. The more you speak, one is mar b'lesaper harizim meshubach. You don't find that anywhere else. The blacker your tefillin are, harizim meshubach. It doesn't say that anywhere. So if you get up for nates, harizim meshubach. You get up for nates, you're good. You know, it's a tremendous thing. It doesn't say harizim meshubach anywhere. And what's the deal with kol amar b'lesaper b'yitzias b'yitzayim harizim meshubach? Why is it that? What is it about the mar b'lesaper? So many of us think that a marvelous sabri, it's time listening, and that's certainly what we're supposed to do, Lela Seder. You know, you try to speak about Yitzias Mitzrayim as much as possible. You try to speak about the tell over the entire story. That's certainly what we're supposed to be doing. Why is there an emphasis on kol marvelous sabri, Yitzias Mitzrayim, Harizim Meshubach? So the idea is like this. If anything ever happened to you, I don't know what your various interests in life are. Some people are interested in sports. Some people are interested in money. Some people are interested in sports. Some people are interested in politics. Some people are interested in sports. Some people are interested in science. You know, whatever your interest in life happens to be. Imagine you're the only person in the room who saw, you know, the last second field goal at a football game. You're the only person, and you couldn't believe it. Something amazing happened, and you just couldn't believe it. What do you do? What's the first thing you want to do? What's the first thing that happens? Anytime something, you know, it's probably the old joke about the not very righteous rabbi who leaves shul on Yom Kippur to go play golf. You've heard the story, right? The rabbi goes, leaves shul on Yom Kippur to go play golf, and he's a sick golf addict, and the there's a storm in the heavens, and the angels are saying, please, Almighty, strike him down. And Almighty says, I'll take care of it, boys. And the rabbi goes out there to the golf course, and he tees up, and sure enough, a hole in one. And the angels, the malachim, are, how could that? You know, what do you call it? You give him the schar, he hits a hole in one, and the voice comes out, well, who's he going to tell it to? Right? So that's the ultimate torture. You know, what are you going to do? You're golfing on Yom Kippur. There's nobody to say it to. And if something exciting happens, you know, half of going on vacation is being able to tell people, oh, it was amazing. Oh, it was unbelievable. Really? Yeah. Then, you know, under your voice, well, yeah, I mean, we were, you know, we got flies, mosquitoes, you know, a little poison ivy. You know, I mean, they don't have to know why it was unbelievable. It was just amazing. It was just unbelievable, right? And half of it is being able to talk about the experience. Kalamarbi is up at the same time. Sure, we should do it. But it's not a question of doing it because we should do it. It's a simon. It's a simon of where we're really holding. If a person feels it, they talk about it. when something is in the kishkis and something we're excited about, we're buzzed about, then we're talking about it. Almost effortlessly, we're talking about it. You know what the shvach is? That means we genuinely have been mekayim. What's the sign that we've been mekayim? The sign we've been mekayim it is that we can't stop talking about it. Because then it means that we genuinely feel. Sometimes people sit at the Seder, okay, let's try to figure out what should we talk about now. We all know the story. What should we talk about now? A person who's really, again, we're obviously talking about a difficult level to reach, but to the degree that a person is buzzing with the excitement of it, is the degree, it's the simen that the person is really experiencing it. That's called a marvelous opportunity. Gosh Baruch Hu should help us that we should Yizocha and Pesach, that we should truly feel it, that we should get out of Pesach what we're meant to get out of it, and we should be zochet to the same way that Klal Yisrael had the Yetzias Mitzrayim, then we should have the Yetzias Mitzrayim in all areas in our day. Amen.